friends. Welcome to the only radio broadcast dedicated to bringing you more truth packed into 1 hour than the mainstream media gives you all week long. You're listening to Follow the Money Weekly Radio on the web at www.ftmdaily.com. On this week's program, a shocking jobs report release and another rough week on Wall Street continues to cause more uncertainty among investors. In this week's special guest interview, we welcome back veteran money manager and financial commentator Paul Nolte. Paul and I will discuss what lies ahead for stocks, energy, precious metals, as well as the U.S. dollar and the euro. And while U.S. stocks lost about 4% in the month of August, last month was explosive for gold, which was up 12% in August alone. That's the best month that the yellow metal has had in almost 2 years. Silver investors also enjoyed a 4% increase in the month of August. So how will gold and silver perform in the month of September? Our good friend and longtime precious metals advisor, Tom Cloud, will be here to answer that question and many more in this week's Precious Metals Market Update. And we are excited to unveil our newest weekly segment to this week's program called the Retirement Minute. This week, retirement specialist John Burrs will discuss the importance of diversification in your retirement plan. But first, we begin the program with a look at some advanced investing techniques. This week, I conclude our series on how you can achieve lasting financial security with our very own 5 levels of financial freedom. Today's discussion will be on our final level, level 5. If you want practical financial strategies, don't touch that dial. Friends, we have a very special program lined up for you this morning, so get ready. You're listening to Follow the Money Weekly. The best hour in radio begins right now. All right, friends, welcome to this week's program. I am your host, Jerry Robinson, editor-in-chief over at ftmdaily.com. That's followthemoneydaily.com on the web. And the author of the book, Bankruptcy of Our Nation. So glad that you're joining us today. We have had quite a week of news, and we're not going to spend too much time because in our upcoming interview with Paul Nolte, he'll be joining us live from his offices in Chicago, Illinois, to talk about the stock market, the dollar, the euro, gold, energy, all of that. We're looking forward to that. Also standing up on deck, Tom Cloud has mentioned. We're going to have some really good information about the month of September and this fourth quarter for precious metals. You won't want to miss that. Also, as I mentioned, John Burrs, who used to do our financial strategy segment, is now doing our retirement minute. We've taken that and skinnied it down to about 60 seconds. I really think that you're going to enjoy this segment the way we have it set up now. Today, he'll be talking about your retirement plan, diversification strategies. So all of that coming up on our program today, plus in just a minute, I'm going to begin talking about level five, some advanced investing strategies and techniques that you can use. In fact, that's exactly what we're all about here at Follow the Money Weekly Radio, is helping you come up with strategies and solutions to this economic crisis and just to your financial life in general. Sometimes people accuse me of being too optimistic. And sometimes I think they think that my optimism is rooted in the fact that I think the economy is going to be okay. And I don't know where they get that information, because for the last several years, we've been talking about how this economic crisis was coming. And now that it's here, we're warning people to take precautions and to do things. We've been saying that for the last several years. So my optimism is not in Washington, it's not in Wall Street, it's not in any of these things, but instead, friends, my optimism is in you. It's in your ability to take control of your financial life and to implement good stewardship principles into action for you and your family. Of course the economy is a mess, of course all of that is bad. But, you know, let all those other people just wake up to that, okay? For you and I, we're going to talk about how you can be educated on this, how you can be equipped on this, and how you can be empowered to go forward despite all that we see. I tell you that in the time of the Great Depression, there were a lot of people who were able to find opportunities amidst all of the crisis. And it's no different today, friends. There are opportunities galore right now. You just have to know where to look. Thus the name, Follow the Money Weekly. So again, so glad that you're here. Thank you for joining me on this hour-long program. Now, this week we got bad news, more bad news. Of course, the employment growth grounded to a halt in August right here in the United States as non-farm payrolls were unchanged. The Labor Department put out their not-so-rosy report on how the month of August was rough. Zero was the number of new jobs. That hasn't happened, friends, since the time of World War II back in 1945. That was the first time that jobs have not been created for an entire month. The jobless rate held steady at 9.1%, and the Obama camp is scratching their heads, desperately looking for some sort of fiscal policy to implement in order to stimulate the economy. We will be paying very close attention to this and bringing you any updates via our website, FTM Daily. Be sure to check that out. Now, we're not going to spend too much time on the economy this week in our segment one because we're going to conclude with our five levels of financial freedom, friends, for the last 4 weeks. And if you've missed these, I encourage you to go back and listen to the last 4 weeks because there we have discussed our first four levels of our five levels to financial freedom. We went through level one where you basically took time to build a emergency reserve for you and for your family. That's where you really begin to build an emergency reserve. In level two, we talked about asset, income, and life protection. The important insurance and protection components, will, all of that we talked about in level two. Level three is where you begin to build and diversify your financial reserves. There we talked about the importance of diversifying your savings. We talked about foreign currencies, precious metals, and the like. And then in level four, last week, we talked about the need to build and diversify your investments. We talked about the four different rules of investing, plus the need to create multiple streams of income. Friends, if you missed that, any of those, but especially last week's, for those of you who are interested in that, I encourage you to go back into our archives available on our website and listen to that very important radio program. Now, this week, we're going to move into level five, our final level. That is advanced investing and speculative investing. Okay, now this is not for the faint of heart, and this is not for those who have not gone through the first four levels of financial freedom. We want to encourage you that these five levels have been put into place in a very specific order. So the strategies that we'll be talking about today are not things to go run and jump into. You first want to go through 1, 2, 3, 4, and then you move into level 5. Let's talk about the basics of level 5, and then we're going to wrap up this entire series on the five levels of financial freedom. First of all, in level 5, one of the most important things that you can do is open or expand your own business. I cannot stress the importance of this at all because the majority of people who are wealthy today, have a corporation. It doesn't necessarily mean that they run a hot dog stand or that they have a large financial institution that they are an owner in, but instead, they have learned the power of having their own corporation, the tax benefits that come from having your own corporation. Opening and expanding your own business, it's very powerful. Some people buy and sell real estate or hold real estate and build all of that through their own corporation. And friends, because they have it all flowing through their corporation, they receive many different tax benefits. Let me tell you what I consider to be a secret that those on Wall Street would never, ever, ever dare tell you. And that is that the majority of wealthy people today do not earn their money through the stock market. That may sound foreign to you because from the time that you get out of high school and you get out of college, you're taught to stuff full your 401k or stuff full your IRA and put all your money into the Mr. Market machine and the glorious Wall Street casino, as I often call it, and just hope and pray that you get a good amount of return over the course of your working life. That way you can pull the lever and enjoy that nice stream of income at the end of retirement. They use those Monte Carlo simulations where you take out 4% and it should last you for the rest of your life. How is that working out for many people around the country, friends? It's not working out very well at all, because Wall Street cannot consistently make people rich. It is a fool's game to think that Wall Street is the place to earn riches or great, tremendous wealth, because the majority of millionaires today and the majority of those who are wealthy today do not do it by way of the stock market. What do they use the stock market for? They use the stock market for holding their wealth. Well, how did they generate their wealth in the beginning? They generated their wealth in the beginning through their own business, through their own hard labor. And friends, nothing against being employed, because everyone needs to have work to do. Everyone needs to be able to labor. But the point is that eventually, friends, if you truly want to break free in this system, you definitely either A, you need to be a high-level executive, or B, you need to start your own business. You need to start your own business. And level 5 is a great opportunity for you to do that, because underneath you, you've laid the 4 levels beneath you where you have your reserve, you have your good protection, you have your will in place, you have lots of savings to fall back on in the event that you need it. You've also tried to develop some multiple streams of income. And now is the time to really expand your own business and spend time doing it, and maybe even make the leap from being employee to being employer. And so that's a very exciting place to be, friends, in level 5. In level 5, there's also those who want to take some of their money that they have built up, and this is, of course, only for speculation purposes, and use it for stock trading and option trading. Now, friends, I know a lot of people who do understand options trading and or stock trading and do consistently produce a pretty healthy income. In fact, I used to do that. At one point in my career, I was a day trader. I used to spend a lot of waking hours during the day making money and losing money in the markets. And it can be a lucrative business. It can also be a very bankrupting business, unfortunately, for many. And I would say probably most. Becoming a successful stock trader or an options trader takes a lot of education. It takes a lot of the school of hard knocks. But these are the types of things that occur in level 5. The third thing that you can do in level 5 is venture capital. Investing in the businesses of other people. Taking your money that you have and investing it into the businesses of others. This is a very powerful technique, a very powerful tool that makes many very wealthy. I know a gentleman who got involved into a service company. He was able to buy the rights to about 40% of all the profits for a very small amount. And now the company is thriving. It does a very unique service in the city that it's located in, and now it's expanding out as a franchise. And this gentleman, who literally put in $6,000 upfront capital to get this business off the ground, is now enjoying his cash flow from this amazingly fast-growing business. 40% of the profits are his. Now, he did take a risk, but $6,000, friends, is not a huge risk when you think about it in the long run. So venture capital can truly be a wonderful way to generate income or just grow your investments in level 5. It's not where you start. It's where you are going to end up. Now, recently, I took on a new venture capital idea. I think I told you about this last week, that I had a good friend who flips cars, lower cost cars, not the ones that are $20,000 or $30,000, although that may be a lucrative market as well. But in a college market, he actually takes cars and buys them at auctions or, you know, some other way, finds cars for sale, and then he flips them in his own city. And he makes very good money, sometimes 100% returns on the cars, sometimes even more, as he sells them. And he sells them quickly because they're low priced. When I talked to him, I said, you know, I'd like to invest in what you're doing. And friends, those kinds of opportunities can run across your path. You help that person, and that person helps you. It can be a wonderful time when you're a venture capital investor. And so I want to encourage you, as you get to level 5, to really think about that. You can also fund ventures overseas. There are things like Kiva.org that you can go online and take a look at, where there are businesses that are trying to be started up overseas, and you can provide very small amounts of seed capital and earn an interest return on that money. It's just a fantastic way to help others and at the same time earn money. Finally, in level 5, there are real estate strategies. Real estate is a tremendous wealth creator. Now, those looking at real estate over the last few years may be scratching their heads at this point and saying, well, it's really been a wealth destroyer for many. And that is true when you take a look at the short term. However, in the long term, everyone needs a place to live. And so a real estate investment strategy can be one of the most lucrative in the long run. And so rental properties, acquiring rental properties in very key select areas of the country can be a very smart thing. My good friend Robert Kiyosaki, who will be back on the program here soon, actually buys rental properties in Texas, and he buys them in Oklahoma. He finds areas that have very booming industries going on, and he buys apartment complexes in those areas. You can also, if you don't have a whole lot of money, you can work as a wholesaler. You can actually go find the deals out there and then work with an investor, someone who does have money, one of those venture capitalists or one of those people who want to buy properties, but they don't want to have to take time to go find them. You can work as a wholesaler. You can also get involved in tax liens. In my own state of Texas, they provide a tremendous amount of money in interest, or actually it's actually what they consider a penalty, that is charged to those who do not pay their property taxes at the end of the year. And if I go down to my local authority here in Houston, and I pay there at the Harris County Courthouse, if I pay their back taxes, then I receive a very healthy amount of money when they pay that off. That is called tax lien investing. If you've never considered that, or if you've ever looked into it, it can be a very interesting way to invest money. And there are a lot of benefits to it and some pitfalls as well. We're going to be coming out with a product on tax lien investing later, and we will have lots more information about that. But let me wrap up all of this discussion about the 5 levels of financial freedom. Here's a few things to keep in mind. Number one, if you want to get ahead in this world, if you want to get ahead in this nation, if you want to get ahead in this economy, you must learn the rules of the game. You must learn what the rules of the game are. And how do we figure that out? Well, what are the rules of the game? The rules of the game are found in the federal tax code. The way that the taxes are administered, the way the taxes are charged, the way everything works in the tax system is something for you to figure out. And you know what? You don't have to be a genius, and you don't have to become a tax genius. You simply need to get a good accountant on your side, a good CPA or a good accountant on your side who can help you understand the tax laws and how they benefit you. Currently, Caesar, if we're talking about the government the way the Bible does, Caesar currently favors your own incorporated business. A corporation is favored by the government. Real estate is favored by the government. A certain amount of precious metals, if you don't buy over a certain amount, are favored by the government. Properly structured insurance contracts are hugely favored by Caesar. Wills and trusts are favored by Caesar. Dividend income is favored by Caesar. And so what we want to do is we want to find those investments that fit into the rules of the game, and we want to invest in that way. Now, here's the thing to keep in mind. Many times when I do a financial seminar at a church, or we get emails here at our own organization, someone will ask me, Jerry, is this particular item, is this a good investment, or is this particular thing a good investment? And let me tell you my feeling on that. Investments, of any kind are only tools. They're only tools. So if I were to ask you, friend, is a hammer a good tool? You would say, well, it all depends. If I said, friend, is a screwdriver a good tool? You would say, I don't know what you mean. And that's exactly the same way that I feel about investments. Do you see, investments are only tools in the fact that just as like a hammer is only a tool. If you need to screw a screw into the wall, do you need a hammer? No. You need a screwdriver. And if you need to nail a nail into the wall, do you want a screwdriver? No, you want a hammer. So investments need to be well suited to your own course of action. Investments are simply tools that can be used to accomplish a certain goal. There is no such thing as a good investment. Anyone who says that all hammers are bad has clearly never needed to drive a nail. So your own personal financial goals and your personality type should determine your financial strategies and your investment choices. That's one of the things that bothers me about some of the different financial radio shows out there. I won't name any names, but sometimes they come out and they bash particular investments. Oh, all of these are bad, or all of these are good. Everybody should do this, or no one should invest in these. And you know that, friends, in the end, that's not true. That's someone who is saying that all hammers are bad. It makes no sense. Every single investment exists for a purpose, and it can be right for some people, and it can be wrong for some people. Your goal is to figure out if it's right for you or not. I sure hope you enjoyed this discussion on the five levels of financial freedom. If you would like to learn more about it, we talk about it each and every quarter in our quarterly newsletter, the FTM quarterly newsletter, available on our website at ftmdaily.com. You can simply go there and find out more about all of that. All right, well, standing up on deck is our good friend and veteran precious metals advisor, Tom Cloud. It's time for this week's Precious Metals Market Update. All right, Tom, welcome back to the program, my friend.
Well, it's great to be back, Jerry. Everything going on.
Yeah, no kidding. And here we are at the very end of August, very beginning of September. And wow, August was such a run for precious metals, gold in particular, gold ending higher by 12% in the month of August, notching its best month since November of 2009. The demand is just continuing to go higher as we move into that fourth quarter, as you and I have been talking about for some time, with India and China, the holiday seasons over there. It just looks like this thing is not going to stop. Are we going to see $2,000 before the end of the year, you think?
I do, Jerry. I actually think once the open market opens on Tuesday and we start back after Labor Day, we will start that seasonal buying that accelerates. If you look at the last 11 years, the best month has been September. That is the best month of the year for gold appreciation. Now, certainly when you follow a record-breaking month like we had in August and get a 12% run in a month that historically is flat to slightly down, some of the pundits out there say, well, you can't follow it with another month like that because it was way overheated due to the debt ceiling in August. But I disagree. I think we're going to see a lot of items, not only the seasonal buying, but the problems the dollar's going to have. We're going to continue to see sovereign debt problems, and even people that don't have a lot of money in Europe will continue to buy gold. But most of all, we're hearing about increased central bank buying is going to pop up in September and October. We're talking about like 44 tons being looked for by a certain central bank. So I think all this said, we're going to have another great 4 months to end the year, just like we have for 11 years.
Wow. Well, you know, there's a lot of talk right now about gold being in a bubble. The same people, Tom, who say that gold is in a bubble, and you know the type, the people who say, I can't believe gold's at this price, it certainly can't sustain it, it's definitely in a bubble. These are the same people who also want QE3 because they desperately want their own stocks to go up in value. QE3 is on the minds of many people today, many investors. And the effect that we think QE3 will have on gold is fairly obvious. There are some, though, who are saying that QE3 will provide so much stimulus back towards the stock market that it could detract from the appeal of gold. What say you?
Well, what say I is that on Monday we saw gold go way down like 1740s. And then on Tuesday, when the president of the Federal Reserve, not the chairman, Bernanke, but the president, I don't have his name in front of me right now, but he came out and after Bernanke's speech and said basically they had to consider stimulation because the numbers we talked about had been lowered. The economy only grew at 0.7% for the first 6 months, and it's headed south toward no growth and a recession. So I do agree with part of that money will go to the stock market, but look what's been going on with gold. Through QE1 and QE2, gold has done better than the stock market, but the stock market certainly was helped by that stimulus package, and it will be helped again. I don't have any doubt about it, but what it will do is pressure the dollar down, and both gold and the stock market should and probably will rise.
All right, well, let's move over to silver, Tom. Silver was also up, not nearly as much as gold, but it was up a little over 4% in the month of August. And many people who cannot afford to get into gold have chosen to move into silver, or others have just diversified between the two metals. Silver is the more explosive of the two, both upwards and downwards, as we both talked about. What do you see lying ahead for silver? The same forecast?
Well, QE3 would really help silver. You would see silver go over 50, in my opinion, this year, up over 20% the last 4 months of the year. So those that think there will be a QE3 definitely should be buying silver as quickly as possible with as much money as possible. Certainly, if QE3 does not evolve, silver still stands a chance to go down if industrial demand and investor demand were to slow down for it. But based on the way the market reacted late in the week, you would think with the holiday on Monday, they're betting on silver and gold to go up next week by the interest at the end of the week in both and not a sharp sell-off. So I think it's, while you could say it's slightly risky, I think the odds are in your favor that if you buy silver in early September, you could have anywhere from a 10 to 20% profit by the end of the year. So I really do like silver because I do believe, like the President Reserve, Federal Reserve said, they will need more stimulation in there, and there will be some form of money that will go to these large brokerage houses, that will go to the stock market, but there'll be plenty that goes to silver. And then the last comment on that, as we talked about on your webinar about a week and a half ago, with zero rates and real guaranteed losses by leaving your money on the sidelines, a lot of people are beginning to move money. We saw a large movement of money out of the markets in August, which was very surprising. So I think the people are starting to get the picture that you can't sit there and make 0.5% when your purchasing power is going down 3 or 4%, or probably even more than that. So I think with all those combinations, you're going to see silver do very well. I wouldn't risk it all in silver, but every investor has a pretty calculated chance to make money the last quarter of this year.
Let's talk about something else, Tom, because we have a lot of brand new listeners and we continue to get emails each and every week. Many people have been buying gold off of TV commercials or radio commercials based upon the confiscation fear. And I don't want to minimize that, Tom, because we both know that the government is out of control. They're crazy and we have no clue what they will or will not do. We can look at incentives and say, based upon incentives, they're much more likely to tap IRAs or 401ks based upon the amount of money there than they would on gold and silver. But nonetheless, we can't say that they definitely would not. But for those who are seeking to gain exposure to gold and silver for the purposes of inflation protection, please re-explain the importance of bullion and why numismatic coins, which many of the TV commercials and the radio shows sell, may not be the best choice for individuals.
Well, it's the worst choice. If you look at the last 11 years, gold's gone from 250 an ounce to over 1,800, and the rare coin index has not even doubled. The average commission out there among eight firms that were surveyed is over 36% to buy something when you're buying bullion coins, you know, at something like 2 or 3% in commission. There's just no comparison. You've got, and who's to say they won't confiscate rare coins? I mean, there's no law out there. It's no different than the law right now, except the difference is there is a law that says that bullion can never be confiscated again. It was signed in 1985 by President Reagan. There's no law out there that says you can't confiscate rare coins. So it's really a mixed thing. It's all about one thing, Jerry. It's about deception and making money for those telemarketers that are misrepresenting people. I have to talk to people every week that have bought rare coins and have bought bullion at the same time where they're down 20%, they'd be up 20 or 30%. And people just need to realize rare coins are for collectors. They're not for investors. And get into bullion coins that go up or down based on the price of gold. And I say this from the bottom of my heart, the longer they hold those rare coins, the worse off they're going to be. And I've been saying this for 3 years and have been dead on it. Rare coins have done nothing in 3 years while we've seen gold double. So, you know, you can't sit there and listen to that just because someone's trying to make a large commission off of you. You need to put the money in the bullion, and that way you will be protecting yourself and you will see the kind of returns that go up compared to gold.
Fantastic, Tom. Well, if the folks would like to contact you and find out more about what you do, how can they do so?
Well, they can call me at 800-247-2812. And two other little blurbs, if they don't get my email blast, they can go to FM Daily and hit the precious metals button and sign up. It's a completely confidential list. We don't sell it, show it to anybody, and we'll put you on our list. And we send out usually about two or three emails a week to keep people abreast of what's going on. And lastly, I want to just mention palladium. We gave that buy signal on August the 4th when spot was $729, going up $50. And I've gotten a lot of questions the last 2 days. Is it still a buy? And I say absolutely. I'll say it again, as I've said several times on this show. We will see $900 palladium this year and probably $1,000 palladium this year. It's just started moving. So, no, it's not too late to get in. And I still think we'll see at least a 20% rise from where we are right here. So that pretty much covers all the metals.
Fantastic, Tom. Well, I appreciate all of that, and we look forward to having you on the program next week. I hope you have a great weekend.
All right. Look forward to it, Jerry. Thanks a lot.
All right, friends. Well, when we return from this break, my interview with Paul Nolte, a veteran money manager and financial commentator, here to talk to us about where the markets are heading now. And we'll also be joined by Christian retirement specialist John Burrs, who will be here with our brand new segment, The Retirement Minute. Friends, don't touch that dial because you're listening to the best hour in radio. And we return in 2 minutes.
There are places I'll remember all my life, though some have changed, some forever, not for better. Some have gone and some remain. All these places have their moments. With lovers and friends, I still can recall. Some are dead and some are living. In my life, I've loved them all.
Hey friends, this is Jerry Robinson from Follow the Money Weekly. Recently, we have been receiving many emails from our listeners commenting on the great help they're getting from our precious metals expert, Tom Cloud. Gold and silver are excellent hedges against the growing threat of coming U.S. inflation. Who's your gold guy? Make it Tom Cloud With over 30 years' experience with precious metals, Tom will answer all of your questions. Don't buy your gold and silver through some call center and pay inflated prices. Call my good friend Tom Cloud and speak directly with him and get all of your questions answered. For a limited time, Tom is offering free shipping and insurance on every gold and silver purchase made by our listeners. Call 800-247-2812. And when you do, tell him that Jerry Robinson from Follow the Money Weekly sent you. And he'll throw in that free shipping and insurance on your entire order. Call your gold guy, Tom Cloud, right now for the very best deals on gold and silver coins. 800-247-2812. That is 800-247-2812.
General Secretary Gorbachev, if you seek peace, if you seek prosperity for the Soviet Union and Eastern Europe, if you seek liberalization, come here to this gate. Mr. Gorbachev, open this gate. Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Confronting the lies of the age.
Confronting the lies of the age.
Bringing you the truth.
The truth.
The whole truth.
The whole truth.
And nothing but the truth. You're listening to Follow the Money Weekly. Weekly. Weekly.
Well, my next guest is a chartered financial analyst. He is currently the managing director of Dearborn Partners. He has been managing money for over 20 years and has been quoted by many mainstream financial media outlets like Barron's, Fox Business, Investors Business Daily, and MarketWatch. His name is Paul Nolte, and he joins us this morning from his office in Chicago, Illinois. Hi, Paul. Thanks for coming on Follow the Money Weekly Radio.
Good afternoon. Nice to be with you again.
Yeah, good to have you back. You know, there has been a lot of tension in Washington, in Congress, Paul. There's been a lot of tension just in the nation. So much division right now, politically speaking. And, of course, with the economy doing what it's doing, many people are on edge with unemployment the way that it is now. And now many Fed watchers are noticing that the Fed is displaying this same tension. There seems to be a lot of rocking of the boat internally as the Fed is trying to, you know, basically wringing its hands, trying to figure out how to proceed with both interest or both special interest inside wanting to steer the boat in a particular way. Now, last week, whenever Bernanke spoke at Jackson Hole, there was a lot of people waiting for him to say something about QE3. While he didn't close the door necessarily, he certainly didn't do what he did last year and kick the door open to QE3 like he did last year with QE2. So how do you interpret the recent apparent division at the Fed, and are you convinced that we will see a QE3 or at least some form of it in the near future?
I think really that is the debate that's going on around the Fed, and why we have the division in the Fed is that debate around QE3. If we look back analytically and we look at what happened after QE1 and QE2, while it was wonderful for the financial markets, it really wasn't much for the economy, and that's ultimately what they were trying to do, is get the economy going. So you have a division in the Fed from those that are looking at what other alternatives can we do, what other things can we do? Can we do something along the lines of a twist program where they're pushing down the long-term rate, similar to what they did in the 50s and the 40s, or can we go into a 2.3 version of what we saw the last couple times? And I think part of that, the concern in the financial markets and the concern around the Fed and those that are watching is the slow realization that they're getting to the bitter end. They're running out of bullets. They're running out of things that they can possibly do in order to try to get the economy going. Remember that the Fed really only has at their disposal one lever, So, or you can think of it along the lines of they have a hammer. So to them, everything looks like a nail. And that's what they're trying to do, is trying to use that and implement that in an economy that is certainly a lot more complex, and the solutions that they're providing are not necessarily the solutions that the economy needs at this point.
All right, Paul. So what do you think? Do you foresee QE3 before the end of the year?
I would like to say no. I would like to say that the Fed steps back over the course of this year and allows, and I think that's part of what Bernanke was talking about at Jackson Hole, was he really did put the onus on Congress, on the president, to come up with some fiscal solutions as opposed to a change in monetary policy. The monetary policy is pretty well run its course, or has run its course. The next solution, the next step has to be fiscal policy, and that is out of the Fed's hands. So my guess is that the Fed has passed on doing QE3 and has passed that baton now on to Congress.
Interesting. Okay, kind of a hot potato that's being passed back and forth. We'll see. You know, there's weak GDP numbers here in the United States. There's concerns over the sovereign debt over in Europe and, of course, here in the U.S., and many investors are witnessing a higher level of volatility than many of them are able to stomach. Are you seeing a shift in attitudes among your clients towards less risky asset types currently in our current environment?
To a certain extent. I mean, we have shifted the portfolios over the last 6 months or so toward a little bit more defensive posture, toward more conservative healthcare, utility, consumer stocks, and into bonds and away from equities in general. We notice a shift in performance comparatives. Again, what we do is we take a look at how the stock market performs in terms of bonds, or how does energy stocks perform in comparison to healthcare. And when we start to see those shifts, it's an indication to us that the complexion of the market, the characteristics of the markets have changed. And those have changed over the last 6 months, starting really in April. So we've shifted the portfolios a little bit to that. I think a lot of clients are, having been through this now a couple times in the last 10 years, a lot of them are, here we go again. So we have not really put a lot of money at risk through the entire run back in 2009-2010. So the losses that we've suffered to this point, at least, have been fairly modest. But again, a lot of the clients, when we start talking about money management, long-term management, the first thing out of their mouth is, I don't want a lot of risk, having been through the environment that we've been through the last 10 years.
Sure, yeah, and it's understandable. What's interesting is the fact that we're in such a low interest rate environment, so those who want to take risk off the table really have a hard time doing it. Many people are turning now. We're seeing the big multinational dividend-paying stocks really doing well. I noticed McDonald's, even through some of the real big volatility we've seen, just cannot be brought down. Some of the other big ones, Johnson & Johnson, some of these other really big dividend-paying stocks seem to be doing very well. Some investment professionals are saying that these are going to do well as we head into the next several years, and that small and mid-cap are probably the place to avoid. Do you agree?
We have seen that shift in the performance, and we've shifted our portfolios accordingly the same way. After having really dominated much of the decade from 2000 to 2010, small cap value, and mid-cap stocks have been really the place to be as far as domestic investment goes. That has started to shift. From a valuation perspective, the very large multinational companies that you're talking about are very inexpensive compared to small and mid-cap stocks. And we do think that that is the place to be. And surprisingly enough, those names that you rattled off all fit into the category of consumer stocks, healthcare stocks. And those have the defensive characteristics that we generally do like in an environment that is very volatile. They also have the added benefit of being very global, so they're not tied to any one particular economy, but they're tied to more to the global economy, and have the ability also not to have to rely on borrowing money to keep their operations going. So they're self-financing, very strong companies, And in an environment that's very volatile and very uncertain, those are the companies that do best.
Paul, what's your take on energy? Energy has been very interesting lately, somewhat volatile. What about the big Chevron, Exxon plays, and of course, even some of the more interesting shale plays with natural gas? How do you advise your clients on participating in energy?
We're generally, from an investment perspective, we're a market weight in the energy area, and we tend to like, again, the very large multinationals. So we do have investments in Chevron, Exxon. We do go down into some of the drillers, so we do have some money in Schlumberger, Baker Hughes as an example. Much beyond that, we have not gotten involved in a lot of the other plays on the energy side. We tend to stay with the very large multinationals there. Our normal investments tend to be large cap core. So a lot of the smaller companies and a lot of the more specialty plays, we generally stay away from and stick more to the large multinationals. But right now, those tend to be driven by the dollar. So the commodity market as a whole, and you can look at gold, oil, food, et cetera. Look at the dollar first and see how the dollar is doing, and that'll give you a pretty good indication on how a lot of the commodity markets are acting.
Is the U.S. dollar, in your opinion, doomed, as many say? Are you bullish on the U.S. dollar? What's your long-term view?
We're what I would call a violent agnostic on the dollar. It's going to be volatile. There is right now not a currency around that is going to take the place of the dollar and be the currency of choice. There's been talk of denominating in the euro. We see what the problems are with the euro. There's talk of denominating it in the Chinese currency. Again, I don't think they're going to allow a full float. So the dollar is still going to be the reserve currency of the world, mainly because of size and depth of the market. So when we start to see issues around the world, investors normally will come and gravitate toward the U.S. and by extension also gravitate toward the U.S. Treasury, even though that has been officially downgraded by S&P down one notch. It is still the largest, broadest, and deepest market. And because of that, I think it's going to be very, very difficult to change that from being the reserve currency of the world.
Were you surprised to see rates stay perpetually low and even decrease after the S&P announcement?
No, not at all, because remember when that occurred, we were also seeing some issues in Europe. So again, with the global crisis and with the U.S. markets being very volatile, they're trying to go to the safe money. The safe money is in the treasury market. That has yet to unwind, and I think the other part of it, and it's kind of been caught in the perfect storm, if you will, between sovereign debt issues, volatile U.S. markets, and then throw on top of it an economy that looks to be slowing certainly much more than it was early in the year. So those three factors lead investors normally into the treasury market, and they've been the big beneficiaries of that shift.
Europe is in shambles, Paul, and it seems as if the world is waking up to that fact, as they have with the United States. But there does seem to be a lot of concern, since Europe is not the world reserve currency, that it may break apart, that it may not last. Are you in that camp? Do you believe that the euro is going to break apart eventually, or?
I think the euro is going to stay together in some form. It will. It may not look as though it is as it is today. You may see the larger countries stay in. You may see Greece go out. It will allow Greece then to use their own currency, devalue their currency, to pay back the debts that they have. That is the problem that a lot of the smaller countries are having at this point, is that they don't have a way to get out from underneath 100%+ of GDP in debt because they cannot devalue the euro. They can devalue their own currency. So I think you may see over the next couple of years, you may see Greece, you may see Italy, you may see a couple other countries go out of the euro, which means that the euro as a whole should be stronger going forward. But I think inherent in the euro, and this is something that was brought out certainly when it was first constructed, is that it is a flawed currency because you do not have a united, the countries behind it are not united socially, economically. There's more variables in those countries than there are consistencies between all of those economies, unlike the U.S., which is much more homogenous. So I think it's flawed to start with. Does it stay? I think it will stay. It will stay, though, different than what it is today with fewer countries participating.
Yeah, you've made a good point about the fact that Greece, for example, cannot devalue its currency. And it's interesting that in this era that we're in now economically, that is a viable option or a viable strategy for buoying your economy. I mean, that goes way back to the Roman Empire when Nero began shaving silver off of the coins and putting a little bit of copper inside. And so it's the same idea. And I think that whole concept has, coupled with the immense demand that we see around the globe from central banks and from the emerging nations for gold and silver, has really been something as the public is awakening and fearing the fiat paper money. How do you approach precious metals with your clients? Are you of the persuasion that we are in a bubble with gold and silver, gold in particular, or are you of the persuasion that we are just in the very beginning stages?
I think we're probably somewhere certainly in the middle. Having had a run of 10 years, it's hard to argue that we're in the beginning phase. We're certainly not in the parabolic stage that we saw in the 70s into the early 80s in gold. The similar types of moves have yet to occur. That being said, we do have, or I have with my clients, a gold exposure, mostly in the mining companies. The mining companies are extremely inexpensive right now versus bullion. They have not benefited nearly as much by the price rise, and I think from an investment perspective, that makes a lot of sense. Now, from a gold perspective or a gold and silver perspective, one of the things I know that is being debated is whether we're in an inflationary move or a deflationary move. I think we're leaning much more toward a deflationary move because of the global debt problems that we have. It's hard to be inflationary when you have the burden of debt that's acting as a wet blanket on global growth overall. That being said, gold should still hold up relative to everything else in that type of an environment. Where it suffers is where you do have global growth, much as in the way of the 80s and 90s, where you had very good global growth and you had declining inflation rates. Right now, we have very little in the way of global growth. We have inflation outside of the commodities that we talked about earlier at very, very low levels and bordering in some cases on deflation. Gold should do okay in that type of an environment. But as far as an investment goes, the cheaper play, at least from our perspective, is to be looking at the mining companies as opposed to the bullion.
Yeah, and there seems to be a lot of discussion on that point because the mining companies have definitely not participated with the rise in bullion, especially this year. Some argue that that's because the mining stocks are obviously attached to the market, and if the market continues in a downward spiral, as some fear, while gold goes up meanwhile, then there still could be that disparity. Others, such as Bill Murphy, who were recently interviewed from GATA, says that these gold mining stocks and the gold juniors are basically going to be going up in a internet type of mania, kind of like a dot-com craze eventually. Do you foresee something like that, or is it a little more stable?
I think it'll be a little bit more stable. I think if you take a look at those periods of dislocation in the financial markets, and I'll point to 2008 as a perfect example, everything save for the treasury market and the dollar went down. So gold prices went down, gold stocks went down during that period where we were all looking at what may be the next step of the collapse of the financial system. So I don't think that it's necessarily the safe investment that has been touted in these very short periods of economic and financial dislocation. Now, that being said, I think from a valuation perspective, as we talked about, the mining companies are very inexpensive. Now, there's two ways, obviously, to get that to resolve. One is for bullion prices to come down, and it can be argued, certainly with a 12% run that we've seen in August, that's probably a little bit extended and is due to correct, and we can see the stocks rise. But I would be very surprised, pleasantly so, since I'm invested in them, but that the mining companies go into that type of a parabolic rise. But I would expect to see some return back to a normal valuation between bullion and stocks over the next 6 to maybe 18 months as investors kind of go back and forth between the two.
All right, Paul. Well, my guest today has been Paul Nolte. He's the managing director of Dearborn Partners in Chicago, Illinois. Paul, I get your weekly email commentary, and I do enjoy reading it. Tell our folks how they can learn more about you and your newsletter.
There's a couple places to go. One is certainly to the Dearborn Partners website, and that's dearbornpartners.com, and you can go to private client, and you can sign up that way through the website to get the weekly commentary. The other way is to email me directly, and that would be pnolte, for Paul Nolte, at dearbornpartners.com. I'd be more than happy to put them on the email list. And the newsletter comes out Monday mornings, generally before 10 o'clock Central. So it's a good beginning of the week read.
All right, Paul. Well, thanks so much for your time, and I appreciate you joining us.
As always, very enjoyable. Thank you.
All right. Well, next up, we have our good friend and Christian retirement specialist, John Burrs, here with our brand new segment called The Retirement Minute, which contains some important information for those in retirement or those nearing retirement. So without further ado, let's move right now to our very first Retirement Minute.
When dealing with a volatile market, sometimes the most difficult challenge is to manage your emotions. If you decide you need to re-examine your game plan, it should be done with as much care as you put into developing that plan in the first place. So when the market goes off the tracks, knowing why you originally made a specific investment can help you evaluate whether those reasons still hold, regardless of what the overall market is doing. Remember, a well-diversified portfolio is important. What I mean by diversification is spreading your investments over different risk types and asset types. So ask yourself these questions. What portion of your retirement fund should be able to create an income stream that you cannot outlive? What portion of your retirement funds can you not afford to lose when the market goes down? Should precious metals be a part of your portfolio to help you diversify your asset type? So remember, if your plan is based on good, sound financial principles, it will help you weather the emotional roller coaster you might be feeling.
All right, John Burrs is a retirement specialist within the Christian Financial Advisor Network. That's on the web at cfanetwork.org. If you're looking for a trusted Christian financial advisor in your area, someone to help you with retirement, or someone to help you just get started on your financial plan, simply go to www.cfanetwork.org, fill out the free brief online form, and a trusted Christian financial advisor in your area will contact you within 3 business days. All right, friends. Well, that brings us to the end of our program. Thank you so much for choosing to allow me into your life each and every week. I feel honored and privileged that you are a part of our life as well. And as always, I leave you with this final word, this time by Robert Louis Stevenson, when he said, "Don't judge each day by the harvest that you reap, but by the seeds that you plant." Just something to think about. Remember, friends, when you want the truth about the global economy, just follow the money. Have a safe and prosperous week, and I'll see you right back here next weekend. God bless.
The views and opinions expressed by the guests on Follow the Money Weekly do not necessarily represent the views of FTMDaily.com or Makers Group Financial, LLC. Even though these are proven strategies, Jerry Robinson is not a financial advisor and his guests are not legal or tax advisors. You should always consult a trained financial advisor and or tax advisor before making any financial decisions. John Burrs is a registered representative of and does offer securities through SideCore Securities Incorporated. Lifetime Decisions Management Incorporated is not a subsidiary of nor controlled by SideCore Securities Incorporated.
The more you see, the less you know. The less you find out as you go. And
you much more than